All power and glory go to God. All greatness is from God. When a hero stumbles, well, the cowards rejoice. Nothing feels better to a coward than to watch a brave guy fall.
Magician got a story that's behind his tricks, and every GM got a story that's behind his picks. And when you listen, pay attention to the details. You can hear the ocean when you listen to the seashells. A newborn taught me wisdom that college couldn't, and college taught me how to talk more because I wouldn't. Words are sharp and they can reshape your disposition. Give out love and don't worry about your acquisitions. Too worried about the conflict that you clinching, but your team is too much for you to carry in your own division. Palms is itching, about to run into some money next. Lord made me slow it down, cause I was surely missing steps. You don't step into my goals. Man, New Ginobili, can't nobody hold me. I need change like a gentrified neighborhood, but money ain't the only thing that can keep me straight for good. Bread alone is only good for the physical. Better make sure your soul's attached to your backbone. Verses for your vertebrae, chapters for your shoulder blades, books for my mental state, and letters on my dinner plate. You're consumed by what you consume, and the fumes from social media can mess up your cool. Clickbait on the internet can ruin your food, but depression ain't hashtag mood. I wanna see the moon when I stare up at the constellations to connect the dots. Vision very clear, make moves, connect the plots, and return all the earnings to my family. Prayers for my health and for my sanity.
Yo, 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 we back again, KRSM 98.9, The Morning Show, this Monday the 8th. Say, Linus, what you up to, man?
Man, chilling here. How you doing?
Doing good, man. You got your coffee ready?
Always.
What you got over there?
Sweet tea, man.
What? No. You got something else. You got no sweet tea.
Oh, this is something else, man. This is the Starbucks, you know, the one they come in the glass at the local
bodega. Yeah, so you on to Fraps already.
Yeah, on Fraps season.
It's the morning time, but you are already on Fraps already.
No, but that's the season.
Oh, that's the season.
Man, you know, in Minnesota, as soon as that sun come out, it's Fraps. You move over to Fraps.
Yeah, I got me a hot Starbucks, man. Yeah, so what you do this weekend, man?
Oh, we celebrated a couple birthdays, man. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yo, March 4th was my birthday. I'm a Pisces. You know what I mean? Stay away from Pisces, man.
They're terrible.
Yo, nah, we ain't gonna say that. How you gonna say that? You married to a Pisces.
She know. I call her. It was my wife. We celebrated my wife's birthday too this past weekend. Yeah. But yeah, Pisces are a lot to deal with. Man.
Yeah, we definitely a lot to deal with. So we celebrated my birthday and his wife's birthday. You know what I mean? At my crib, we grilled out. You know what I mean? We had some seafood. We had some steak, you know what I mean? All type of good stuff, you know what I mean? I thank the Lord, man, for blessing me with another year. What else we do, man? We played basketball. You know what I mean? We played some basketball, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My son got a trial, an AAU trial coming up. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to teach him everything that need to be taught, you know what I mean, before that takes place.
Absolutely, man. Well, we got a special guest. We dedicated this episode to, you know what I'm saying? So
we got a special guest. I'm talking about a very special guest. His name, we got Chris Broussard on the radio today.
Yes.
Tell him about Chris Broussard.
Man, Chris Broussard is on TV just about every day. He's a sports journalist. He works over at Fox Sports One. You can catch him on many different shows, Undisputed, Colin Cowherd. He pops in on a lot of these shows. And he also has his, a radio show on Fox Sports with Rob Parker called The Odd Couple. And so and he's been covering the NBA for years on ESPN, even before Fox Sports One. So Chris Broussard is an NBA insider. He, and so it was great speaking to him. You're going to get a lot of information in this episode. And also, he's going to speak about his King Summit. He's a Christian brother, and he's the leader of an organization called the King Movement, and right. They have a summit coming up. So we're going to ask him all type of questions, sports questions, journalist questions, and also about the King Summit.
Yep, y'all make sure y'all tune in. KRSM 98.9.
Okay, so we got our first question. What made you want to get into sports journalism?
My sophomore year in college, I played basketball at Oberlin College where I went, and I looked around at a lot of my friends, and everybody seemed to have a plan to know what they wanted to do with their life. You know, some of my teammates knew they were going to law school, public policy school, to get their MBA, or want to be an engineer, professor, whatever. The girl I was dating, she was going to med school. And so I was like, man, they all know what they want to do, and I really don't have a clue.
Right.
And so I actually got scared, because I was like, man, I got two and a half years left before I have to get out into the world and be a responsible adult and take care of myself. Right. And so I came up with a formula to try to figure out what I wanted to do. And that formula was something I enjoyed, which was sports, because I knew it was important, if possible, to have a job that you enjoyed, mm-hmm. plus something that I was gifted at, which was writing. I always had the ability to write. It was just a gift. You know, everybody's got their various gifts, and one of my gifts was being able to write in a compelling, captivating way. I started writing rhymes when I was like 9, 10 years old. And wow. Beyond that, I just wrote. I liked writing and was good at it. So I said, let me combine what I enjoy plus what I'm gifted at, sports plus writing, and try to become a sports writer. And fortunately, my grades were good. I always did well in school. And so because of that, once I began pursuing sports writing, a door was open for me. And I got an internship at the Cleveland Plain Dealer the summer before my senior year in college.
Wow.
And that's really what launched my career. I did well that summer. And then I got another internship after I graduated at the Indianapolis Star. And then from that point on, I got a job at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, a permanent job. And so that's where I really started my career.
Wow. So who did you look up to with journalism? Like, so did you look up to anybody, any black journalists?
I don't know. I mean, I did as the, I was all, sports was my life. Like right. Growing up, I mean, I played football, basketball, and baseball in high school. I love sport. Anytime we got a chance to read, you know, do a book report in school about your own, a book you of your choice, it was a sports book. I read Sports Illustrated religiously. So, and I had thought as a kid, wow, it'd be great to be like a broadcaster or something like that. Mm. So I looked up to, you know, I weren't black, but like a guy like Brent Musburger was, I loved Brent Musburger.
Right.
There weren't that many black sports guys. I mean, obviously you had like an O.J. Simpson who was an athlete. Irv right. Cross, who recently died. He was on NFL. I think it was NFL Today. But he right. was an athlete. I didn't know that at the time, but he had been a former athlete. So there weren't a lot of brothers out there that, you know, were doing it who hadn't been athletes. And right. as far as writing, I really never – I had not – fully thought about writing. I thought about journalism a little bit in high school, but not necessarily sports journalism. It was just more like journalism. I write well, maybe this is something I could do, but I really didn't pursue it. And so there weren't journalists that I fingered out, like, I want to be like him, or I want to be like him, not as far as writers and stuff. So When I was in the business, and my second job was the Akron Beacon Journal, and I initially started as half copy editor, half writer. And when I would be in the office doing copy editing, when I had free time, I would read a lot of the best journalists around the country. This is before the internet. And so I had access because as an editor, I could read some of the top writers around the country. So I did that. But there wasn't like one person that I modeled myself after or anything like that.
Right.
I know because when I went to college too, I went there to my major was journalism, but I actually ended up switching it to communications. And it's crazy how when I first went to college, I was just like, yo, I'm trying to make it to the NBA because we played basketball too. Me and Prince, we're brothers, and we both went to the same college and played basketball. And then
where'd y'all go?
A school called Bethany Lutheran College. It's a D3 school in Mankato, Minnesota.
Okay.
Yep.
And so we still thought we was getting there.
You know,
I'm not gonna get mad at you because I think when I entered college, I mean, I think I had slight thoughts that dreams, I should say, that right. It might be possible, but right. I realized quickly that wasn't gonna happen.
Right, we're originally from Virginia, man. So we come from the town of AI, Michael Vick. So we out there, we just think anything can happen, man. Yeah, anytime.
We played a school at Oberlin. We played a school in West Virginia. I think it was called Bethany. That's not the one you guys went to, I guess. But
No. We from Virginia Beach, but so when we was in college, I always wanted to have like my initial strategy was always figuring out, okay, so if I have a good year here, a good year there playing basketball, I could transfer to a D2, a D1, and then so forth. But like you said, around my junior year, when I really had to lock down a major, I really got into communications. And so I was glad that it was brothers like you and like Rob Parker who were already on TV that was just showing us, you know what I'm saying, like it could be done. And also offering a different perspective, because when I go into my second question, as a black journalist, not just writing, but also being on TV, do you feel it's your job to stand up for a lot of the black players who might be misunderstood, like an Allen Iverson or like a Stephon Marbury? Because you know how sometimes in sports, the narrative on them gets so far away from what we see them as. So do you think that's part of your job as well?
My job is to be fair. And historically, a lot of brothers, a lot of black athletes have not been treated fairly as blacks in society, obviously. So that's just how I look at it. I mean, everything, just because a dude's black doesn't mean I'm going to write or say something favorable about him. Now, I'm going to try my best to treat him fairly, you know.
Right, right.
I'll give you an example. I remember when, I think it was regarding Latrell Sprewell, when I was in New York covering the Knicks. This may have even been before I was covering the Knicks. I may have been covering the Nets. Right. But Sprewell was with the Knicks, and one writer had written in one of the local papers that Sprewell, with his cornrows, had gone full gangster.
Oh, my God.
Cornrows.
Right.
And so obviously, as an African-American, I think many of us feel a responsibility to represent our people and help our people progress.
Right.
And I was like, so I whether it was TV, radio, in the paper, I just was like, look, this is ridiculous. Like, cornrows are a hairstyle that has been in the black community forever.
Right.
Exactly. And that goes back to Africa, literally forever.
As long as black
people have been in existence. And my daughters had cornrows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I remember as a kid, you know, people in the neighborhood having cornrows. The girls wanting to plait my hair and braid everybody's hair. You know, We wasn't gangsters, you know. Gangsters, you know. And so that's just an example of how it's important to have diverse perspectives, because so many things, and that was on record, that Shrewell, because he had cornrows, he was gangster.
Right,
and
right.
So it's important to have people of diverse perspectives to, you know, give the truth and shed light on cultural situations like that. But now, you know, I mean, I try to treat brothers fairly.
Right.
And so sometimes when I think the situation is a positive or favorable, I'm going to write and talk about a brother in a positive way. When I think it's a negative or something worthy of criticism, then I will criticize. We can't, as African Americans, obviously, like I said, we want to represent our people and help our people progress, and where necessary, protect our people or shed light on situations for our people. But we can't be afraid to also be critical at times when it's deserved or when it's warranted.
Absolutely.
And we're going to be right back with more of our interview with Chris Broussard, KRSM 98.9. Hello, listeners. This is Seth Linus from the Let's Argue with Prince Carlton Morning Show. I just want to thank you for listening and supporting our podcast. If you want to support more, you can head over to anchor.fm/letsarguenow/support. And you can give us a monthly contribution of 99 cents, $4.99, or $9.99. Your support will go towards more consistent content and informative interviews in the future. Thank you. Welcome back to the morning show, Let's Argue with Prince Carlton on KRSM 98.9. Remember, you can check us out every Monday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. We're going to hop right back into our interview with Chris Broussard. Thank you.
Okay, so me and my brother, we was talking about this yesterday. Okay, so what can be done about the number of black head coaches in the NFL, as well as college basketball and payment for players? For like college players?
Well, as far as black coaches, look, sports, and particularly football, but in general, is a great example of how, and I'm going to take it just for this moment a little beyond sports.
All right.
But sports is a great example of how many white Americans in power are not going to hire African Americans at a fair rate.
Right.
Okay. Because, and that's why when you talk about things like affirmative action or quotas, and we may hate using the word quotas, but they're necessary, because the proof is in the pudding that for the most part, the white power brokers are not going to hire African Americans in fair representative numbers unless they are absolutely forced to. And sports is the greatest example of that, because we absolutely dominate sports, football and basketball.
Yep.
And football is more of an example than basketball. The basketball has been better in terms of its diversity, but we're 70% of the NFL. And we've got what now? Four NFL head coaches, two, maybe three black general managers.
Yep.
So if it's three, that's 10%. That's not even 10%. If it's three black GMs of 32 teams, if they're four, who are the head coaches? You got Mike Tomlin.
You got Flores.
Brian Flores.
And I think the other one is Salah from 49ers. Yeah.
Rob Salah, but he's Lebanese.
Okay.
And you have Ron Rivera, who's Latino.
Yep.
So it may be three. I feel like I'm missing one, but it's three or four. Three isn't even 10% of 32 teams.
Yep.
And so I'm not saying, and I honestly don't think 70% of the coaches in the NFL should be black. But I think you have to find, there's a space in between our population, which is 13% of the country, and that 70% of the NFL. It probably a fair number, probably should be around 30-40%.
Right.
Right.
Something like that. You know, you're not trying to remove whites completely from the sport. But so my point is the fact that we're 70% of the athletes, 10% roughly of the head coaches, and even fewer of the general managers, the front office positions, that's ridiculous. And that shows you, because historically, the coaching and executive pools of these major sports have come from the players.
Right.
We're players.
Mm-hmm.
We laud Pat Riley, former player. We laud Phil Jackson, former player. You know? And so they, when 70% of the pool is black and you still aren't hiring us, that yeah. just shows you're not hiring us, gonna hire us in respect, in representative numbers, unless you absolutely have to make a quota.
Right.
And so
right.
that needs to be discussed. But I mean, I hate to go nuclear, but right. in light of the fact that they're just not going to hire us in fair representative numbers, and as you know now, there's even incentives that they put in for you. You get a benefit if a coach from your team has been yep. hired. Yep. You know, they're giving in benefits and incentives, and it's still not happening. I think the players would have to be the ones, and it's That's unfortunate. A, mm-hmm. It shouldn't be their responsibility. But the fact of the matter is, if the players stood up as a union, I don't think it should be based on individual players, but as a group, if they stood up and said, you know what, this is ridiculous. We're not playing until you start hiring African-American coaches in representative numbers. Right. Or that, something to that effect. There's something the players have to – they have power because they are necessary and they're right. irreplaceable. They have the power – to stand up for the coaches. And in a very real way, it's actually standing up for themselves, because many of them may want to be coaches
yep.
when they retire.
When they retire, yep.
Right.
Yep. So it's standing up for their own opportunities. That would need to be fleshed out, you know, because there are good white coaches, and it's not like you got to fire a good one, you know, just to hire a black person. But something needs to be done, and I think the players – are the ones, short of a quota, like we want 30% of our coaches to be black, which, you know, you don't necessarily want to put it out there like that.
Right.
But I
right.
think the players would have to kind of be the ones to stand up and take control.
Yeah. You remember you said something about that yesterday, about the players got to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because when I look at the Deshaun Watson situation, I look at it like, that's kind of what he's saying, but he's not coming out and saying it. I think he's the owner is McNair, and I think he, you know, he has said something racist before about he didn't want the inmates running the asylum, and then so you have Deshaun Watson not being consulted on any trades or who the head coach is, and so he feels like he's just, you know, there with no power. So I think he's trying to exercise some power. So I do think.
No, yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know if – I mean, obviously they hired a black head coach, and that doesn't seem to have made a difference. I'm glad he met with David Culley, because I think it would have been a bad look and very short-sighted of Deshaun, when we know we need more African-American coaches, to not even have met with him. So I'm glad he met with him at the very least. But, yeah, they shouldn't have lied to Deshaun. Deshaun's a man of principle, a man of character, and I think his word is his bond. And the fact that they lied to him, that was – because, look, I don't believe the players should choose the head coach, choose right. the general manager. But don't tell me I'm going to have some say or a voice in the room, and then you don't give me that voice.
Right.
So, yeah, I think this is very much based on his principles and his individual situation. But it is an example of players beginning to step up and take control of their destiny. And obviously, and this is a spillover from the NBA,
right,
where I think LeBron James has been very instrumental in starting this.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, one part of that question was just the college basketball and payment for players. Do you think that's Do you think that's because I listened to your the Odd Couple the other day, and you guys were talking about how nobody knows who's playing college basketball right now, and it's kind of sad to see. And so, do you think
college basketball may be on its deathbed because now you got some of the better players in the country going to the G League, and there's talking this kid who's the top player in the country might go to the G League, and they're getting paid. I can't blame them. And the thing is too. Look, college basketball can enhance your brand or your name recognition. Mm-hmm. It did that for Zion Williamson. But some of these guys are so famous with social media. I mean, LaMelo Ball didn't need – and granted, his was a unique situation because of his dad and his brother, Lonzo, playing in the NBA. But he didn't play a minute of college basketball. James Wiseman played 3 games of college basketball.
Yep.
So you're seeing more. Ben Simmons played half a season. You're seeing more and more guys that don't have even anything, even a year's worth of college basketball experience playing in the NFL, NBA, and having name recognition. So it's going to be very tough for college basketball to kind of bring this back together and become as significant, even close to as significant as it used to be. As far as paying athletes, I do think college athletes deserve to be paid for the amount of money they're generating. I think name and image and likeness is a good start.
Yep.
But I think it could be even more than that. I'm not going to claim to have all the answers on it, but that certainly is a start where players could benefit from their name, image, and likeness. Take away some of the archaic rules that try to preserve amateurism. When I was in school, if I had gotten a job at the New York Times, I could have worked there and gone to school. You know, so why can't a guy, get benefits from his athletic ability and still
exactly
play the team or be in school? So, yeah, they're gonna have to do something, and it may be. I don't know. It might be too late. I mean, because if the G League really starts getting a lot of these top young players from high school, then you're eventually going to start seeing G League games on TV.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yep. And if they're balling, and that's going to kind of become the popular minor league. I know it's technically a minor league, but
right.
Bad college ball has been the de facto minor league for the NBA, since time immemorial. And so this could be a shifting of that if more and more of these guys go to the G League. And I can't blame them. If I'm going to get $500,000,
$750,000,
$300,000, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, some guys are growing up middle class, maybe even upper class, but some guys are growing up in poverty. And if that can help your family out for a year, come on.
Yep.
Who's not doing it?
Yeah. All right, so I want to get into the virtual conference that's coming up on March 19th, but first, just tell us about the King Movement and how you started that and when it started, and and what's the foundation of it.
The King Movement is a national Christian men's movement that stands for knowledge, inspiration, and nurture through God. It was founded in 2011. But we started building chapters around the country around 2014, 2013, 2014. And now we have about 15 chapters throughout the country. And our general mission in a nutshell is to strengthen men in their daily walks with Christ. And so we want to help men live out their Christian walk faith and be Christ-like Monday through Saturday. Or maybe I should even say Sunday afternoon through Saturday.
Right, exactly.
So in our marriages, in our relationships with our children, in the workplace, on the college campuses, in our fraternities, whatever it may be, but just representing Christ, as we should. And we do that through support, encouragement, accountability, teaching, and brotherhood. And a big part of our foundation is, men need male bonding, just like women need female bonding. And that's one of the great, you guys play sports, one of the greatest things about playing team sports is the camaraderie with your teammates.
Yep.
In the locker room, on the bus. I mean, my best friends were always my teammates growing up through college. And right. So even fraternities, gangs, lodges, those are all examples of the need for male bonding. And when I became a Christian my senior year in college, and I was 21 years old and working and trying to serve the Lord, and I didn't know a lot of young brothers my age or that I could relate to that were trying to live for Christ. And right. So I longed for that male bonding in Christ. I had male bonding with my fraternity brothers and other friends, but I wanted it with some brothers that were trying to have my worldview and were trying to pursue the Lord like I was. And so that really led me to want to start the King Movement. I also saw that a lot of brothers, as I met more and more young cats that I could relate to in Christ, a lot of them, their walk with Christ was like a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. You're on for 6 months, you out for a year, you're back for 3 months, you're out for nine months. And depending on your background, you know, for some people, backsliding is, you know, fairly innocuous.
Right.
For other people, backsliding is you back on the street selling dope, or you got your gun and you out on the streets again. You know, and I knew brothers that when they backslid, it led them to back in jail, you know, or in prison. And so I felt like a part of it. There are obviously many reasons to why somebody may walk away from their faith, but I thought a part of it was that they didn't have brotherhood. And because they didn't have brotherhood in Christ, they always were hanging with their boys who weren't Christians, which is great. I hang with friends who aren't Christians. But you also need your boys who are in Christ, who are going to support you in your walk and have similar values and views. So those are reasons that we started the King Movement. And I felt like it's a lot of brothers doing great things on a local level. But if we could come together, we could have a bigger witness in the world. And finally, you know, I'm very concerned about the plight of our people, the African-American community. And I feel like if we can even those of us who say we love Jesus and who say we're Christians, if we could live out our faith, that would strengthen our families, our communities, our country, and our world. And so those are really things that inspired me to want to start the King Movement.
Right. Do you feel, because we've been brought up in the church like ever since we was just, because we was born in Virginia, so it was like down south, we was all always in church. Do you feel that society now is like when you bring up God and family, it's kind of like a pushback? Do you feel that now in society?
Oh, more than very ever? Much so. I mean, we obviously were never a Christian nation in truth, you know, because, you know, just the way people of color have been treated.
Absolutely.
But it's undeniable that many of the principles and foundations of the country did have Christian and Judeo-Christian foundations, you know. Right. Now, people didn't follow it. People didn't live it out, particularly whites in the way they treated people of color. But those foundations were there. And those foundations actually aided the Black community in fighting for freedom. You look at all of our freedom fighters, from Nat Turner to Henry Highland Garnett, Richard Allen, Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Marcus Garvey, obviously Martin Luther King, even Malcolm X, who wasn't a Christian, but they all used the Bible to argue for Black liberation and freedom. And because you had a nation that at least respected the Bible,
right,
the word of God, even though they didn't follow it, they respected it as the word of God. So when Martin Luther King and others used it to prick their hearts, so to speak, it did make a difference. If you had a country that, like America's becoming, that really don't care what the Bible says, and then you think of it as the word of God, then now if I come up and I'm fighting for Black people and I'm quoting scripture, care. Like, so what? And
what that mean?
You know, so. But we're getting away from that. There used to be a time when Billy Graham was one of the most respected people in the country.
Yep.
If Billy Graham today would be, he'd be very much hated, I think, by much of the country, the things he said. And so we are definitely, the church is being pushed to the periphery of society, is being pushed underground. But guess who I blame for that? The church.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because Jesus himself said, you're supposed to be the light of the world. You're supposed to be salt of the earth. And he said, when the salt loses its saltiness or loses its flavor, then it's not good for, it's good for nothing. Literally, he said, it's good for nothing but to be trampled upon and thrown out. And if you look at the history of the American church, I'm generalizing, but overall, the American church did not stand up. It wasn't salty during slavery and Jim Crow.
Right.
Salty, I mean, if I have a plate of food and I put salt on it, it's going to be different than if I have the plate and there's no salt on it. The salt is supposed to make a difference.
Yes.
Yep.
And when you look at the church in America, it didn't make a difference in the general society. Like, the society was racist. I'm talking mainly about the white American church. The society was racist, so the white American church was racist.
We're going to play some music, and we'll be right back with more of the interview with Chris Broussard, KRSM 98.9.
Get the shoot they want, you ain't tough now. We'll see who really got the heart when it touched down. But watch your homies drop and run, where's the love now? Where's the love now? Where's the love now? It's time to fight a different war, put your guns down. Don't be the one to drop and run, gotta stand your ground. The ability to trust is seeming more foreign, but the epitome of love is my sole purpose. See, I'm conflicted, I don't know, feelings growing further. But I'm too toxic for a woman, cause I probably hurt her. See, I ain't afraid to struggle, cause it builds character. I'm aware of the feeling where you feel inferior, but I don't fear enough. Y'all can try to put the pressure up, the more the merrier. I'll survive any epidemic. Who you scaring, bruh?
Never scared, if I walk in fear, that's debilitation. Devil told me that he bringing heat, I'm the ventilation. If you wait, reading the signs, I give you illustrations. Begging for a face-to-face with God, not no imitation.
See me come face-to-face with odds, I'm the demonstration. All my problems out here getting drugged, rehabilitation. Ignorance is still oblivious, and I'm just innovating, integrating, matching activists. It's time to fight a different war. Put your guns down, put your guns down, put your guns down. It's against you to shoot they ones, you ain't tough now. We'll see who really got the heart when it touched down. But watch your homies drop and run, where's the love now? Where's the love now? Where's the love now? It's time to fight a different war. Put your guns down. Don't be the one to drop and run. Gotta stand your ground.
They say I'm supposed to be a leader, but I'm uninspired. Cause lately all my homies put in work and getting fired. And are we gonna be the drivers of our destination? Or are we gonna miss the bus because of hesitation? I still went past my alarm clock, snoozing for an extra 15 to fade into my big dreams. Kick spleen, talking loud, trying to cause a big scene. All my problems start at the root of my inner being.
I'm the one to intervene. Older brother obligations, all the problems in the hand. Here for any complication. They're scared to be the alpha, then they wanna blame the woman. When they independence driven, food for thought, you got a stomach.
Food a lot, you ain't 100. All communication plumbing ain't enough to be up in the house. It's the way you run it. Been so many sleepless nights, turned to long years. But if you wanna talk it out, then I'm all ears.
It's time to fight a different war. Put your guns down. Put your guns down. Put your guns down. Teens get scared to shoot they ones. You ain't tough now. We'll see who really got the heart when it touched down. But watch your homies drop and run. Where's the love now? Where's the love now? Where's the love now? It's time to fight a different war. Put your guns down. Don't be the one to drop and run. Gotta stand your ground.
Ayo, my homeboy Lou asked me about family, I sorta pause for a second, thinking blood is thicker than water. But what if we add flour to that water to make batter? Cause we got bigger fish to fry on a country steak platter. But we rather stay drinking milk, keep it a safe matter. Blood relatives ain't always the ones to chase after. Cause the family that we make can go a long way. Some of them cats that touch you behind me, catch them the wrong day. But that ain't nothing that I condone, it's nothing I promote. Brothers drowning on dry land, whatever floats your boat. That's the approach that they taking with their decisions now. Guess we better off dead, bypassing the prisons now. That's the type of stuff that results in blowing the head gasket. Family's there when their grief is in the pit of your bread basket. Born into a family, reborn into another one. Citizen of heaven, and if I speak in my mother tongue, I might need a translator, need someone to clarify. Cause if words could kill, I would definitely need an alibi. And these words will count as an indictment towards your mortal soul. There's only two types of people, we play such an important role. The wicked and the righteous, nothing's ever in between. We got family on both sides, you know exactly what it means.
The most difficult challenge you or I or any believer will ever face is coming to terms with the death of an unsaved brother. Parent, husband, wife, God forbid a child.
I came into this world in a family, strong foundation, which leads to my sanity. Speak volumes like bold speakers. My wife pregnancy, my whole life changed through a fetus. The Lord lead us, going through an old photo album. See, I know my family loved me and I never doubt them. When my grandmother had surgery, I wasn't there for her. Nowadays, when I'm in town, pull out the chair for her. I miss funerals and weddings, yo, I be regretting. Maybe I'm the one that's really out here half-stepping. Family bigger than social media platforms. Some block me, cause I don't acquiesce to social norms, Lord, unlock me. Some growing up, don't even recognize them. Some doing so well, I be afraid to jeopardize them. Story passed down, I still carry in my DNA. Love to my cuz, locked up and never see the day. My parents put it back together after 25. Something I should strive for, my family I would die for. They say the youngest ones are so overprotective. Don't want no outsiders invading our collective. Leaving the nest is just part of my journey. Never getting bounced out, first round of my own tourney. Yeah.
For whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he is my brother.
Before I'm a black man, I'm a spirit man. Was tempted to say that a cappella, they let the lyrics stand right on their own too. He's still on the throne too. So when you start to get friendly fire from your own crew, just remember that real family starts with the most high. And it ain't betrayal if it ain't somebody that's close by. Your loved ones can hurt you the most. They can make it a family feud without a game show host. Survey says it's heart disease, but what do you diagnose? Keep your friends to a minimum to avoid overdose. Put my trust in Father God, he defines who I am. I don't rock with Mother Nature or her brother Uncle Sam. That ain't my bloodline. And if it's guilt that the judge finds, then it was done in battle, I chalk it up as a war crime. I'm defending the faith.
Hope you enjoyed the music. We are back. The morning show, Let's Argue with Prince Carlton on KRSM 98.9. We got more of our interview with Chris Broussard.
Have you ever got to a point where you had to compromise, like for work-related purposes, you had to compromise or almost compromise like your religion, your faith?
Well, I think, look, if we be fair, I mean, we all like to be like, no compromise. I don't compromise. Yeah, right. Life is full of compromises. You know, right. I mean, so yep. I'm married 25 years. I've compromised before, you know. And so, I mean, they're generally like, you don't, in general, compromise is not even necessarily a bad thing, you know, right. Because you have people of different beliefs, of different views. We're a pluralistic society. So compromise is necessary if we're going to get along in a pluralistic society. No, but no. There has to be a limit. There's just certain things I won't compromise.
Right, right.
And whatever, come what may, but there's right. certain things I just can't compromise if I'm going right. to follow the Lord. Right. And so I haven't made any major concessions or compromises like that. And so, yeah, so in that regard, no. And I just think we as believers, we're going to have to stand up because, as we said earlier, like, they pushing back hard.
Man, heavy.
Jesus said, if you're ashamed of me and my teachings, I'll be ashamed of you. Now, he said, if you're ashamed of me and my teachings.
Right.
People, it's easy to say I follow Jesus, I believe in Jesus.
Right, right.
Because what does that mean? There's plenty of Jesuses out there. What? Right. But where people don't get mad when you say you believe in Jesus.
Yep.
They get mad when you start talking about his teachings.
Definitely.
And I'm following his teachings. Yep. And so here's the thing, too, brothers. There are still in 2021 enough Christians. Black, white, and other ethnicities and races, that if we really, if Christians stood up and had more unity, then we could make an impact. And I don't think we would be getting pushed out of society. But right. because the church is very divided, particularly along the lines of race, it can't stand. And Jesus himself said a kingdom divided against itself can't stand. Right. So, like I said, even as Christians may lament the fact that the values of society are changing and we're being pushed aside, we have to understand that we are largely to blame. And I'm just keeping it real, particularly the white American church, which right. is not done unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm generalizing yep. again. There are individual whites and churches that have done well, but because they haven't loved their neighbor as they right. love themselves, when that neighbor's of color, right. that's a huge part of the problem. And a lot of people, especially when white Christians even say, "Oh, this was a great Christian nation. Make America great again. Let's get back to the old days." You're putting slavery. You're putting mm-hmm. rape. You're putting castration, you're putting division, dividing the family, you're putting all of white supremacy, you're putting all of that on Christianity. So right. certainly people of color don't want that. Mainstream whites who want to be fair racially don't want that. And even your young white Christians who are growing up don't want that. So you're right. really doing a disservice by putting all that sin and evil and associating it with Christianity.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So one of the topics at the King Summit is the Kingdom Family. So what does it look like to you for a guy to be a godly husband and a godly father? I just been married for 2 years, and I got my first child on the way in right. 7 weeks. Yeah, thank you. So what does that look like to you?
Yeah, I've been married 25 years, and I have twin daughters who are 23. Or they'll be 23 next week.
All right.
And so, I mean, being a godly husband, like, my priorities in life are God, family, career. And obviously there's some overlap. Part of being a family man and a godly husband is being willing to provide for your family. So yeah, that's mm-hmm. part of your job, is you work and you want to provide for your family.
Right.
But I would say, obviously, we all know the moral things. I mean, you're faithful to your wife. You love your children. You do what's best for your children. I think you have to be sacrificial as a godly husband and father. The Bible said equates the husband to Christ and the wife to the church. It says the husband's supposed to treat his wife like Christ treats the church. Mm. And that would go for your kids as well. And Christ is very gracious with us. And he sacrificed his life for us. So he sacrificed his own personal comfort and feelings for his for the church. And so we should be willing to do that for our wives and children. So with our children, I mean, we put, you know, them first as far as, you know, we made sacrifices as far as not having certain material things to get them a better education or to, you know, do things that would benefit them. And so that's part of it. I think that the man is called to be the spiritual leader and head of his household. And so we, you know, particularly in the Black community, virtually up until this last generation, and still include many of them, most African Americans have a testimony of a mother, an aunt, a grandma, somebody who was just sold out for Jesus, who was dragging him to church, right? You know what I mean? And in most cases, it was a woman, right? That they always heard praying at night, that they heard, you know, calling out to the Lord and all of that, right? Well, that's great. And I give honor to the Black women for that. But that should be, in addition to the woman, that should be the man.
Right.
Like the man is called to be the spiritual leader of the household. So the man should be the one making sure the family gets ready and is going to church. Making sure that they have devotionals and Bible studies regularly. The man should, your kids should catch the man, their father, on his knees praying. Mm-hmm. They should have testimonies. I remember seeing my father read the Bible.
Yeah.
And statistics show that when the woman or the mother in a family is saved and, you know, the father's not, 17% of the family get saved. Or there's a 17% chance that the children follow the Lord. But when the man, the husband, the father is saved and living for the Lord, 94% of the family get saved. So part of being a godly husband and father is setting the spiritual atmosphere and tone in your household. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And that's biblical. And we must be in America, and particularly in the Black church, we must not be presenting God and the gospel properly. Because when you look in the scriptures, you don't see a dearth of men. You don't see a lack of men. You see strong women of God, but there's never a situation where, where are the men? We got no strong men. But in the Black church, there are estimates that it's 80 to 90% female.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have to look, and that's one thing the King movement has is doing is presenting the gospel in a masculine way, which is, since we're men, that's what's going to appeal to us, and that's how we should walk it out, and women should walk it out in a female way.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think being the spiritual head of your household, the priest of your home, if you will, being willing and able to provide for your family. Now, my wife is a medical doctor. She doesn't need me to provide for her. And if I didn't had not become a nationally known sports reporter, she would make more money than me. I started out covering high school sports. I could have very easily just remained in high school sports or local college sports. And she would have made a lot more money than me. So it's not about who makes more money. We're in a society where women have access to the same jobs as men. So a lot of times it's what you choose.
Right.
If the man chooses to be an elementary school teacher and the woman chooses to be a lawyer, then she's going to make more money. And that's not the issue. The issue, though, is the man, I believe, and I believe it's biblical, he has to be willing to provide for his family. That's his attitude.
Yeah.
Like, I got to be, I'm going to be honest. My and some people might say this is old fashioned, whatever. if my wife came home tomorrow and said, honey, I'm just tired. I'm tired of working. I don't get enough time for myself. You know, there are a lot of other things I want to do. I want to stop working.
Right.
I would be fine with that.
Yeah.
I would be fine with it. Now, we may have created a lifestyle for ourselves where we got to work things out financially.
Right.
Right.
But I would be fine with that. I don't think I have that right as the man. Absolutely. I don't think I could come home tomorrow and be like, right. Hey.
Absolutely.
I just, you know.
Absolutely not. Exactly.
I don't play ball no more.
Right.
You know, I'm working too much. I ain't been able to play video games in ages.
Right.
So I just want to chill, hang out with my boys. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I don't have that option.
Exactly.
As the man. Now, yep. I'll say this. I don't, if you have a situation where the man is the house husband, as they're saying now, right? If you have a situation where you need to have one of the spouses at home and the wife makes more money than the husband, and it would be so financially, it'd be better for y'all if the husband is at home with the kids and she's working. I'm not going to say that's wrong, because work, being raising, taking care of the children and making sure that house is well kept, clean, cooking. Like, the brother ain't just sitting there watching video games and kids, you know. Like, he's taking care of the house.
Right.
So I'm not speaking against that, because I actually think we should, you know, consider the homemaker, whether it was a woman or a man. That's work.
Absolutely.
You know, and there maybe should even be a stipend for that, you know, that the government supplied or something. I think that would help our households. Right. But my point, I think you get what I'm saying. The man should be the priest of the home, the provider of the home, the protector of the home. Like, with my daughters, I said they're 23. When they started dating at 16, and I let them date because I wanted them to be comfortable around
boys.
I don't want them to be, didn't want them being socially awkward and all that. But I wanted dating with boundaries.
Yep. Right.
So any boy they dated, I met with. We met at Starbucks, or we had lunch together or something, and we had a nice conversation.
Right.
You know, about respecting my daughters, and I don't want them being pressured into doing anything they don't want to do, and so on and so forth. And getting to know the young men, that's protecting your family. I think if when I was coming up, if a father had done that with me, man, that would have had a major impact on me.
Right.
You know, the way I treated his daughter. And so those are all things. Priest, provider, protector of your household. And, you know, we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. But, you know, just being, and then in addition to that, just being true to the biblical morality of being faithful to your wife, you know, and things like that.
Right. Okay, we got one more question, and me and my brother talk about this all
the time. Hold. Before we get to that question, I just want you to can you plug the summit that's coming up on March 19th through the 20th?
Yes, March 19th and 20th, and it is virtual. So there's no excuse. If you're in Minneapolis or Chicago, L.A., Zimbabwe, Congo, wherever, Europe, you can tune in. Look, man, this, we do it every year. It's a national men's summit. It's like a men's conference. And one of the benefits, as you guys know, from everything being virtual nowadays, is that you're able to get guests that you may not have gotten in person.
Right.
For many reasons. One, the guys have conflicts with time. Other speaking engagements, other things on their schedule, or money, you know. You don't have to spend the money to fly somebody in, to put them in a hotel and things like that.
Right.
And so we have a power-packed list of speakers. We have pastors, number one. Pastor A.R. Bernard, who pastors the biggest church in New York City. Yep. We have Pastor Derwin Gray, who pastors a church in Charlotte, North Carolina. Pastor Dale Bryan of Atlanta. We have Pastor Eric Mason of Philadelphia. We have biblical scholars, Dr. Michael Brown, who's actually a Jewish brother who's a believer in Christ. We have Dr. Vince Bontu, who I say is the GOAT. We always talk about the GOAT. He's the GOAT of early African church history. And he talks about Christianity in Africa before European colonialism and slavery. We have Jency Acosta and Donald Cogdell, who talk about justice. We have Hall of Fame athletes, from Brian Dawkins, who's a keynote speaker, the great defensive back, Tony Dungy, who makes a contribution, the Hall of Fame coach. We have Super Bowl champions, Ben Watson, another keynote speaker. Greg Jennings makes a contribution. We have Allen Houston, Clark Kellogg, Eton Thomas, Lionel Hollins, and more. Brandon Marshall, my colleague at Fox Sports, the all-pro wide receiver.
Yep.
We have Christian rappers, steppers, comedians. So it's going to be not only enlightening, but entertaining. And we went out of our way. Like, we have some that are straight keynote messages. We have some interviews. We have some discussions, because we want to do it in different formats so it wouldn't get boring or dull to people.
Right.
But we're addressing, as you mentioned earlier, kingdom, family from a biblical perspective, the godly husband and father, discipleship, how to grow into a man of God, how to grow into biblical manhood, finances. We have Wall Street executive, a former Wall Street hedge fund manager, and another brother who's very astute financially, talking about finances from a kingdom perspective. We have justice. We're addressing the current fight for racial justice and equality from a kingdom perspective. We address race, racism in the church from a kingdom perspective, and racial. We even tackle the notion, the lie, really, the falsehood that Christianity is the white man's religion.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
We attack it, you know, we just disprove it. It's just such a falsehood.
Exactly.
And so we talk about blacks in the Bible historically. We talk about Christianity in Africa, as I said before. I mean, Christianity has been in Africa for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
That's just a historical fact. And so we deal with that. So it's, I'm telling you, and whether, even if you're not a Christian, I mean, I'm sure you want family advice, you want financial advice. We even talk about sex, being responsible sexually and things like that. So you can benefit whether you're a Christian or not, whether you're black or not. It's for all men. And so I couldn't encourage, not just because I'm a part of it, but, man, this is going to be phenomenal.
Right.
So I encourage brothers to check it out. You can register at kingsummit.org. kingsummit.org.
You don't want to miss this next question we ask Chris Broussard coming up after the break. The Morning Show, Let's Argue with Prince Carlton on KRSM 98.9.
We got one last question. Okay. I got to phrase it like this. Okay, so who's the better player, Jordan or LeBron? Who's the better player?
Well, the GOAT, the greatest of all time, is Michael Jordan.
There we go.
And LeBron is second. LeBron is second. There are a few things. Number one, remember when LeBron was in the East and he had it on lock? Eight straight finals, right? Eight straight trips to the finals. The rest of the conference was shook. I mean, Toronto has a great year, wins 50-something games, and just getting to the finals and facing LeBron just shook them, right?
Right.
Jordan did that to the whole league. LeBron did it to a conference. Jordan did it to the entire NBA, okay? Right. That's number one. Number two, Michael Jordan had no weaknesses. Right. So I think you were trying to get at, okay, Jordan may be the most accomplished with the six championships and all that, the 10 titles. But LeBron's just a better overall player. Well, LeBron does have some weaknesses. And it's not, it, I mean, it's not minor, but it's foul shooting.
Yep.
That's right. LeBron's not a very good foul shooter. And Jordan was. And that, obviously, whether it's late in games or just period, I mean, foul shooting comes into play. I also think that LeBron for most of his career, he over-dribbled and dominated the ball too much. And it's a tribute, like LeBron became the system. Jordan was able to just be a part of a system, the triangle.
Yep.
Right.
And LeBron became this. Now, that is a tribute to LeBron's greatness, that you can have an entire system built around you. And that's what enabled him to carry virtually any team to playoffs and contention.
Right.
But I also think that may be why he didn't win more championships, at least to this point, because it can be tough when one guy is dominating the ball so much for other guys that really got game.
Right.
And create on their own. It can be tough for them to manage playing next to you. Now, the Kyle Korvers and the Anderson Varejaos and the Zydrunas Ilgauskases who can't do it on their own, who need somebody to set them up for a spot-up jumper or a post-up or, you know, easy dump-off or something like that. Oh, LeBron's made all of them better.
Right.
But a Dwayne Wade who was next to him, that first year, it was hard to figure out because Dwayne liked doing the same things as LeBron.
Right.
Yeah. And Wade literally had to back up and say, I'm going to be like 80% of the player I could be. Mm-hmm. And LeBron's got to run the show for us to win. And so that Kyrie, that was part of his problem was, am I bringing it up or, oh, you got it this time? Okay, I don't know from possession to possession. Am I the ball handler? Am I on the, you know, wait? Like, that's a challenge. Yep. And with Jordan, two dribbles, pull up, bam. Three dribbles to the hole, I'm dunking them. Like, more efficient. One of his teammates, B.J. Armstrong, told me once, he said, the great thing about Michael was he learned to dominate the game in three dribbles or less. I mean, real talk. Because he was moving without the ball sometimes. He was, you know, again, I get it. I'm not lollygagging for 15 seconds and 20 seconds and everybody standing around watching me and I'm gearing up. You know, here it comes. I'm revving up to go to the hole. And that, again, this is nitpicking. When you discuss the greatest, you nitpick because they're all great.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
Right.
But these are little things that I think make a difference in who was better. If I'm a real baller, I would have rather played with Jordan because I was going to be getting the rock more and, you know, he wasn't going to be dominating the ball. Now, he shot a lot. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. He shot a lot. But he didn't – that's different than just drip pounding a lot. And in fairness, LeBron's not the only one. Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook.
Right,
I mean, that's how a lot of Dwayne Wade, a lot of players today over dribble.
Yes.
And they dribble too much. That was what allowed San Antonio in 2014. Nobody over dribbling. Run through the league, run through the more talented Heat. That's what allowed Golden State to become so dominant. Not over dribbling. Nobody just pounding. Even though Steph got a crazy handle, they were moving the ball. They playing like a team.
Yep.
And that's going to beat one or two dudes just handling it all the time, you know? And so. Yep. I think that is another feather in the check mark on Jordan's side, if you will. So, I just think, you know, Jordan was – I even think Jordan was a better finisher at the rim because he played in an era where, first of all, it was the greatest era of big men in history.
Yep.
He had the Olajuwon, David Robinson, later on Shaq, Alonzo Mourning. You know, and even older Kareem early in his career, Parrish and McHale. And not only that, but you could get hammered.
Yes.
When you got
more physical league.
Finish. LeBron's a very good finisher, but, you know, I don't think he's as good of a finisher as Jordan. And so those are all reasons I think Jordan was better.
All right. Yeah, hurt my heart.
Settled it, man.
Hey, me and him argue about that every single day. The thing that I usually say is like LeBron. I feel like LeBron James just plays a more not he doesn't have the knack that Jordan or Kobe had, but I feel like as a straight up a basketball player, I feel like he brings the ball up the court, he gets the rebounds, he controls the whole game. So sometimes it's like it seems like when you will see Scottie Pippen bringing the ball up the court for the Bulls, you will see LeBron James being the one bringing the ball up the court, but he's also still the man also. You feel right. What I'm saying? So that's usually like my argument when I be saying that.
I mean,
LeBron
look, and that's that. There's some credence to that. I don't agree that he's better than Jordan, but
right.
Jordan played point guard, or what now we would be like view like LeBron dribbling the ball up the court, and it was a tiny sample size.
Right,
but. For about 14 games, he played point guard for Doug Collins in the Bulls before Phil Jackson.
Right.
And his numbers were ridiculous. He had something like 11 triple-doubles or yeah. maybe it was 7
yep,
out
absolutely.
Of 11 games.
Yep.
It was ridiculous. So Jordan yeah. could do that. Now, he did not have the court vision and passing ability of LeBron. Right. He was a good passer, though, but he wasn't like LeBron in that regard. I'll give you that.
Right.
But if Jordan played in this era where he's the best player, so you put the ball in his hands and let him just bring it up court and do what he wants, he would be – his numbers would be even more spectacular. I mean, imagine Jordan in an era where you couldn't hand check.
Right, right.
And where the yeah. floor was so spread out that when you get to the rim, it's one or two dudes there trying to stop you.
Yeah.
Whereas now, when Jordan played, when he went, look back at the film. When Jordan went to the cup, it was 6-7 dudes in the paint.
Right, yeah.
Some of them his teammates, some of them opponents. You had to know how to finish. Hey, when I grew up playing, this notion today, oh, we got to spread, and I get it, spreading the floor is a good strategy, but yeah. the notion that I can't have a dude in the post because I can't drive. He clogs up the lane and now right. I can't drive. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, you knew when you drove, you were going to be in traffic.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
You can yeah. learn how to pass out of the traffic. You got to be able to finish amongst the traffic. Like,
yep.
that's just how it was.
Yep.
And so this notion that you can't do that today is crazy. But yeah, so I hear what you're saying, but look, Dave, who had more post moves, David Robinson or Shaq?
David Robinson.
Okay, so he had more versatility in that regard. Wow, who was better?
Shaq. Yeah.
I mean, at the basketball, it ain't a checklist of skills.
Right.
You
right,
know,
right.
I mean, we could argue that too, but it's not a checklist of skills. That's the better player.
Right.
It's who's more effective. Mm-hmm. Who has a bigger impact? And nobody in modern basketball has had the impact on the court like Michael Jordan, where he just won essentially six straight championships.
Right, right, right.
You know? So stand down.
hey, he would joke me about this for the next 10
oh, yeah,
days,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, I will say this. If and I don't know if this would even matter. LeBron's height was not as high as Jordan's height.
Right.
Right. I mean, Jordan dominated the game at a level that LeBron just hasn't.
Right.
But if LeBron were to say win the next two championships and become the all-time leading scorer and be in the top five, maybe all-time assists, I mean, that's a heck. And be six, have six championships. And yes, six losses, but 12 appearances. I mean, that's a heck of a resume.
Yep.
And so there will be an argument, and I often say when the millennials are controlling the conversation. Like right now, my generation controls the conversation.
Mm-hmm,
the generation right. before me does not say Jordan was the GOAT. Some right. may think that, that's, but you ask Kareem, ask Isaiah Thomas, ask, you know, Oscar Robertson. They're not saying Jordan. They probably don't say anybody, but they right. may say, well, Kareem was great, or
Julius Irving
was great, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill. Yep. Like, how do you pick? It's my generation that says Jordan is the GOAT, and right now we control the narrative.
Right.
But
right.
when the millennials who grew up seeing LeBron control the narrative, and they're on the debate shows and the national sports talk radio and all that, then I think there's a very good chance. I've even said it matter-of-factly in the past that LeBron will be viewed as the GOAT.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I can see. Especially when his Last Dance movie come out, because you know he's going to make one. when that comes out in 10 more years or 15 more years,
right,
I can
right.
see
hey, he working on that now.
Yeah.
Hey, brother, we appreciate you for coming on. I'm gonna sign up today, and God bless you. And I can't wait for the summit. I appreciate you.
Yeah, hey, thank
no
you.
I enjoyed it, fellas. And if you guys have my contact, if you're interested, anyone out there, or you guys, if you're interested in getting involved with the King Movement, you can hit me at king@kingmovement.com. king@kingmovement.com. As y'all know, we need each other.
Absolutely.
We need the fellowship. We need the support. And so I thank you guys for having me on, and thank you for supporting the summit.
All we right. appreciate thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right, brothers. All right. Peace.
All right. Peace.
Yo, KRSM 98.9. Every Monday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. We want to thank y'all for checking that interview out with Chris Broussard. We want to thank y'all for tuning in. It was an amazing episode, amazing show. We have fun. What you got to say, Sid?
Just keep God first, man. Keep working hard. Keep trying. Keep pushing. Whatever goals you got. And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace. KRSM 98.9.
Virginia is the site. Our live coverage continuing. I'm laughing because one of the great chants of all time. Sweet pea, sweet pea, sweet pea. They've been chanting here at the school, and that's the nickname of their man, Cornell Pete Whitaker. He is being introduced at the moment. Came in at 136 pounds and one pound over the lightweight limit.
My opponent never telegraphs his punches. He's jacking milk money and he's eating school lunches. Ain't ready for solid food, he's quick to take your nourishment. How you seeking motivation? No speakers for encouragement. I don't do positive and negative, I deal in good and evil. My spirit is a blank canvas on the Lord's easel. Now why y'all stand in line to party at the Regal Beagle? I'm drawing straws out of a haystack trying to find a needle. Two plates on this record to get me through the night. Seeing the unsafe past, man, it's a gruesome sight. I think the spirit can take a hint since where it's going. Put your container under mine, my cup is overflowing. Hope it's one of another, I'll need you next week. You step out on faith first, I'll take the next leap. Cracking my foundation, Satan detects leaks. He hit me with a right cross, won't get the next cheek. Fighting the good fight, but my training is never done. If he's crafty and I'm faithful, then who's the clever one? Slip the jab, no need to wonder will the hate pass. Constantly taking L's, fighting out of my weight class. I'ma be sweet pea, the judges try to cheat me. But can I blame the judges if the gospel doesn't reach me? Was my heart hardened, thin line, narrow margin, dozing off lawn. I'm supposed to be keeping watch in the garden. No, not Madison Square, sure you can count on my prayer. But it's gonna take more than mine, you know life ain't never been fair. Collecting rent from headaches, frustration and despair. And they've been living here so long, it's constant warfare. It's the eviction notice, we so concerned with POTUS. That when it comes to self-examining, we losing focus. And they ain't saying turn a blind eye to politics. But we can't fight these vampires with a crucifix.
They some blood sucking, soul taking, smile faking. Running the race, my style is grace with every mile I'm making. But I'ma earn my crown in that mountain, I'll climb atop. And my opponent, you mean that bull in the China shop? Well, he won't stop until the day that he's thrown in the fire. False teachers will explode, I'm sent to cut the wire.